fascinating. Gadgets, gizmos, and gear-based technologies.
Welcome to FGGBT. Now, this is the show that takes your favorite fictional science and technology, and we make it a reality. We are the Brain Trust. I am the analytical mastermind, Daniel J. Glenn. With me, the physics phenom, Dr. Michael Dennett.
Dan, it is so awesome to be here. I mean, who wouldn't want to be part of an entire episode dedicated to chocolate?
You know, I'm glad you said that, Denon. I know you prefer your chocolate in chip form, but I'm guessing you're willing to make an exception for this episode. And there's one man who I know never makes exceptions, and that's our enigmatic engineer, Ben Siebser. Ben, what is going on up there on the Brain Station?
Dan, this week I'm trying something very dangerous. Zero-G candy making. In order to perfect my recipes, I must achieve the perfect spherical shape. And there's no better place to do that than here on the Brain Station.
Well, you are going to make something interesting and exotic, just like our good buddy Willy Wonka. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is Willy Wonka and his chocolate factory. But I have to tell you about something else that's brown and gross, and that's a wet fart. And I feel like Wonka really laid a wet fart on the theatrical screen here. Not my favorite. It was a musical, but it felt like the Joker. It felt like a one-off. And guys, I may be a creature of my youth, but the original Willy Wonka absolutely is the greatest Willy Wonka incarnation. I don't know. Denon, you like musicals. You're responsible for this, so I'm holding you accountable.
So in this case, I will take responsibility, but not credit. So okay. As I mentioned in an earlier episode, I recommended three musicals. Two out of three I stand by. You know, this one, it was more for the Wonka idea. I will be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, you know me, I pretty much like any movie I see. I have no standards. Mm-hmm. And for me to say, this was just okay, and I had some concerns with some of the music, I was pretty sure you were going to hate it, Dan. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I do love Wonka, and I do love the original. Is just so powerful, and the idea of chocolate and that chocolate factory was so cool. I figured I had to suggest it and get this on our radar. So it was a sacrifice I was willing to make, a hit I was willing to take for the team. That yes, you would hate the movie, and it would be my fault.
Well, it gave us an end to talk about Willy Wonka, which is what I really love. But you know, the original's got everything. It's got, you know, a lottery. It's got golden tickets. It's got chocolate, fantastical chocolate inventions. All of that is missing from this. Well, almost all of it. But one thing that I thought was really fantastical that actually exists in real life is the process of making chocolate. I learned in an episode on Fascinating Nouns, my interview show, that chocolate is a fermented food. You actually have to let microbes and, you know, it's fungi get involved in this process. You know, and it's so different. I'm not going to go through all the details here, guys, but, you know, much like sourdough is really a product of the microbes that are in that environment, so too is chocolate, because chocolate from around the world in different cultures and different regions have their own, you know, microbe mix. And that makes chocolate a very unique in that respect.
And this is what I love about a little bit about the movie. I like there was, like I said, pieces I liked about this Wonka mm-hmm. was that sort of nod to chocolate, having ingredients from around the mm-hmm. world, being mm-hmm. very dependent on where you get the ingredients. I mean, I'm actually someone who loves dark chocolate really well done, almost more than milk chocolate. Mm-hmm. But I do have that edge where chocolate becomes too bitter. And a brief funny family history story, Dan. Apparently my grandfather did not understand that baking chocolate was completely unsweetened. And was visiting my mom, our house, when I was very young. And he just saw this baking chocolate that she had, you know, in the cupboard and just tried to eat it straight and upright. And let's just say he didn't stay very straight and upright with the disgusting flavor of unsweetened baking chocolate. So mm-hmm. it really does matter. And I'm excited about that part of chocolate.
You're excited about the tasting bitter and
surprising? No, the variety.
And to go back to that worldwide field, I really like that. You know, he's showing the exoticness and how sourcing the ingredients is so important. That's like one of the big reasons why this bulk mass-made chocolate is really not very good. It's because there's shortcuts taken. You know, they're growing the chocolate in these huge plantations that aren't very unique. And then they kind of shortcut the fermentation too, because, you know, it's all about the money and not about the flavor like Wonka.
I think you're right. You know, I feel like you're disparaging Hershey here, but I have never to agree with you.
I would never, never would Hershey. I speak poorly about any of our most treasured brands.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that, but I think you're right. But, you know, one of the things that I thought in researching this that I was amazed by is that I haven't seen the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in a long time. And, you know, it was made in 1971, but it really holds up still. I mean, besides getting your news from newspapers and, you know, things like that. But, you know, it still holds up. It's still funny. I think it's good for adults. You know, it captures author Roald Dahl's style really well, you know. And I don't know. I really liked it. And I think we have to talk about Willy Wonka as a character because he's so unique. You know, in a lot of ways, he's a scientist. He's an engineer. You know, he's a wild character, you know, kind of like the three of us put into one person, if you really, really think about it. But he has lots of contraptions. You know, it's all about science, performance, spectacle, all of that, you know, put into one guy. So it makes him just an enduring character that you want to see do crazy stuff.
No, I love it. I love the original Dan. I am sitting here momentarily taken aback a bit. I'm not sure if for the first time ever you actually insulted me. I still get my news from a newspaper. so I'm not sure what's going on there. Now, I will admit my kids regularly tell me when I say, oh, did you hear this? They're like, yeah, I knew that yesterday, Dad. So apparently there is a problem with getting news from a newspaper.
Yeah, if you want to get yesterday's news today, I mean, that's the best way to do it. Now, this movie came out in 1971. You do know it is not still 1971, as long as
you're... Yes, yes. Okay. The newspaper tells me that at the top, Dan.
True. Yeah. I mean, if only they still had the evening editions, then you'd get, you know, this morning's news tonight.
Right. A little more up to date. So no, I mean, you know, we all love newspapers for sure. It's funny when people still read them. And I love comedy. So let's talk about this chocolate factory. Let's get down to business here, gentlemen. Because when it comes to Willy Wonka, you know, the chocolate factory is what really sparks everything in this movie, you know, and I think it captures the wonder that a kid has, not only with candy, but with how it's made. You know, people are brought up on the board game Candyland, where you see this magical world, you know, made completely of sweets. And you have this right in the beginning, you know, beginning of the movie. This, I don't know if he's a janitor or I don't know who this guy is, but he tells Charlie, you know, no one ever goes in and no one ever goes out. It's locked up tight. You know, it's like a little mini world that you're going to enter into. So when someone gets the opportunity, you know, via the golden ticket lottery, that's pretty exciting. You know, it just made you feel like a kid again.
Well, and some of them actually are kids, Dan, and are still excited. But I will say, when I watched the movie the first time, I remember having that sense of excitement. It's like, okay, why is this place secret? Like, it's weird to try and remember that completely because that was a long time ago for me. But
yeah,
but there is that surprise, right? You don't know that it's going to be a magical thing. Mm-hmm. Previews weren't what they are now. Like, yes. I had no idea what was inside that chocolate factory. Like, I had no idea what type of movie it was going to be, right? And so it's like, even for me as the viewer, Dan, I had no chance of getting a golden ticket because I wasn't inside the movie, but I was super excited.
Yeah. Well, and to get a little inside showbiz here, one of the genius things about that movie is the kids didn't know what was going to be inside either. They kept that set hidden from the child actors, and actually maybe the adult actors too, until the first time they let them in and were rolling to really get that sense of wonder and that real reaction from them.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that, but it is wondrous. I mean, the things that you see, it's really cool. And, you know, Willy Wonka, you know, if you're unfamiliar with the story, I'd recommend seeing the movie right now. But if you know, the golden ticket lottery, they really capture how, as when I was a kid, I mean, I remember just getting swept up in these types of sweepstakes. I got swept up into sweepstakes, where, you know, you'd have, even if it was, oh, there's this toy that's in the, you know, in this particular cereal box, or you sent, I was really into Kool-Aid points as a kid. So, you know, I drank a lot of Kool-Aid. I borrowed Kool-Aid points from my, well, took them from my friends with permission and collected, you know, I think 10,000 of them to get a Game Boy video game. That was like my, you know, my crowning achievement as a child. But my point is, I got swept up in all of this, just like the country got swept up in this movie. And I mean, it captured it so well, guys. I don't know, Denon, if you were ever caught up in anything like that.
No, it did. The movie captured it. I did not do Kool-Aid points. I sadly... well, my big thing was the tickets you get at the arcades, right? Like playing skee ball and other things, right?
Sure, same thing.
Where I discovered I have no patience. I would get the cheap little pencil instead of building up to the big prize. So I didn't have your self-control, Dan. I didn't have that, you know, drive. I also sadly occasionally got swept up in the publisher's clearinghouse because you know those were exciting commercials and you could win a lot of money for very, you know, and you no purchase required, but I did just to be safe, right? Just in case. But actually I not only do I read newspapers, I read magazines back then. So it was not actually a bad deal, right? Like I did actually want the magazines. So, you know, the sweepstakes things, though, I'm totally with you. I was definitely into the prizes in the cereal boxes. Mm-hmm. Like that was exciting.
Yeah.
You know, to buy cereal for the prize in it is just a uniquely, I think, American thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's funny because you buy those things early with your tickets. You didn't save them up. That's why you're a wish guy and not a dream guy, if you refer to previous episode, you know. But I can understand that as a kid. It's hard to wait. And that's what's so great about this is it really captures all of that. What about you, Ben? You seem like a guy who's unflappable. So did you really, were you into any of this stuff as a kid?
Well, you know, I was... thinking
or did
about
everyone
this,
just win? Or are you just where everyone just wins the contest? Is
that no, how you know there were these generation does there it? Were these corners on the Lego instruction sets that had numbers in them, and I think it was a point system where you could like turn them in for like a Lego set or something. And I think I tried it once and it didn't work. I'm not sure what the deal was, but I remember I mean I saved all my instruction books anyways because of course what happens if the thing breaks and you have to put it back together, but I remember collecting those and thinking there was some deal with them, and I'm not actually sure if there was.
I love that. One of my favorite sweepstakes, you know, just briefly, is there was this Yukon stamp rush in like the 50s or 60s where you would buy, I forget what, I don't know all the details, I'll put a link on the website, but you would buy a certain product and you would get a piece of a postage stamp sized piece of real estate in the Yukon. And so there were people who would get, you know, thousands of these, but literally a postage stamp like that was, but you owned that little square of the Yukon and people wanted to, you know, kids wanted to, there was supposedly gold in the Yukon. So people wanted to have this land. That was, you know, people old enough to remember, I imagine that must've been very similar to what happened in this golden ticket. But it is a great contest. If you haven't heard about it, I'll put something up about it, but let's talk about this. Let's talk about winning a golden ticket here, guys, because that's the point of the movie. You don't get into the chocolate factory unless you have one of these tickets, but there's only five. We don't know how many chocolate bars are produced, but the only way you get one is by buying a chocolate bar and there being a ticket inside. You know, this is a lottery, for lack of a better term, and this is a worldwide lottery. But, you know, we've had lots of conversations, and one of our most silly was probably how you could game the lottery system. And I came up with what I think is an ingenious plan, because I don't know if you guys know this, and if you do, pretend like you don't, but do you know what the odds of winning the Powerball are in the United States?
Not at all, Dan. No clue.
Nope.
It's
not offhand.
1 out of 292 million. Okay. Now that seems insurmountable. That's a lot, guys, you know, but it's not more than 300 million. So what that means is if the lottery goes above 300 million, If you buy 292 million lottery tickets at a dollar a piece, you're spending 292 million to have a guarantee of getting 300 million. That's, to me, the easiest way to make $8 million in the world if you have the quarter of a billion to put up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's two problems. One, you don't get the 300 million, right? Like, you get like half of it.
Oh, rainy day Ben comes through to crap on my genius plan here.
So you got to wait till it's like closer to a billion to ensure. Okay. And you got to hope you're the only winner.
Yeah.
And you somehow got to buy a quarter of a million lottery tickets by yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's tricky. That's the tricky part.
That's really the tricky part.
That is tricky. The numbers are there, and you know what you do with the lottery tickets, how you hold them. I do have this bizarre question. I'm maybe showing my ignorance of the lottery, Dan, or you may be showing your age. I feel like the big lotteries are more than a dollar a ticket now.
Yeah. Are they?
I think they're like $5 a ticket,
Dan. I don't
think
they're five.
But it's a great plan.
I think they might be two. But either
way. Maybe it's two. Okay. Yeah. Only doubled. Okay.
Well, I just have this. And it's Mega Millions now. Powerball's in way less states. But anyway.
All right.
Clearly, it's a great plan, Dan. I'm loving it.
Yeah, clearly I'm not a lottery player, but I think my reasoning is sound. My point is this, for those listening, is that the odds seem like they're difficult to overcome. But in fact, oftentimes the amount of money you can win is greater than the odds of you having the odds of winning the lottery. So if you have that much money, you can simply make that much money. I mean, lottery should be a game of billionaires, right? If it's up to $1 billion, you spend quarter of a billion to make a full billion. You know, easiest way to make money in my mind. But we're not talking about money here, guys. We're talking about golden tickets. And this is where it gets a little tricky, right? We don't know what the odds are. We don't know how many. We know how many tickets. We don't know how many chocolate bars are out there. But we know that it's a pretty tricky. And you've got two different spectrum. You got two different ends of the spectrum here. You got Charlie Bucket, who buys 3 Wonka bars and gets a golden ticket, spoiler alert. And then you got Veruca Salt, who I believe the count was 760,000. Her dad converted his peanut shelling factory into a chocolate bar shelling factory. And he shelled, you know, almost a three quarters of a million to get one golden ticket. So I've muffed that. It's super complex, but you guys understand that, like, this, there's a wide spectrum here, is what I'm trying to say.
No, there is. And it shows, Dan, a few physical differences here, right? Like, the lottery ticket, you have to buy and make sure you have one of each number.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you have them stored and collated in an easy retrieval system. Mm-hmm. And then you just wait till the number's drawn, which will be one of the numbers you have, and then go through your system and you find it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Here, right, you actually have to physically unwrap the chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And buy a bunch of them. So this is why having it was not just simply that he needed to be rich. He needed to have a peanut shelling company with the experience of shelling things to be able to get the wrappers off. Because your average rich person would have just paid people off the street who probably would have torn the golden ticket, opening the one with it, and you never would have known it was in there.
Right.
Right. So it's really that combination of money and skill that I think is showing up here.
Well, and you need the place to do it, because if you just hire a bunch of people, how do you make sure they actually give you the ticket? You know, you need security and all this. But you also need the logistics contacts to intercept all the chocolate. You know, there's billions of chocolate bars sold a year around the world, and somehow he's, you know, wholesale purchased enough of them to matter. That in itself is a significant task.
Just pallets of chocolate bars. Well, what's interesting is we see it, you know, in the movie, he says that they're unwrapping 19,000 Wonka bars an hour, which is 317 a minute. That's a lot. And let me just do some quick math here, because that is exactly 5.2 a second. That's a lot of Wonka bars.
Well, again, it depends how many workers you have. I'm going about 10 to 20 seconds is longer than you think. I think a skilled worker should be able to get one bar sort of every 10 to 20 seconds. So I think if you have enough workers, you can do that, Dan. It's one of those numbers that sounds really impressive,
yeah.
But I think human labor can achieve it. I think human labor is way more impressive than we give it credit for. Yeah. After all, it built the pyramids.
Yeah.
Right.
Unlike some of my counterparts in Ancient Aliens now streaming on Netflix, who might claim others are doing it.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And from what we see when Charlie unwraps the bar, you don't need to unwrap the whole thing. You just need to do a little bit of work to see if the ticket's in there.
Mm-hmm.
The real shame is all the wasted chocolate. I hope they were resealing it and, you know, giving it away or something and not just throwing it in the trash.
Ben, so naive. No,
yeah.
That's how he was paying the workers. Yeah. No, he was paying the workers in the chocolate. Yeah. The workers bring it home. It's not wasted.
Yeah. I don't know if Saul Salt, who is Veruca's dad, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's particularly worried about what happens to the chocolate after the wrapping process. But I do like your environmental side, Ben. You know.
Yeah. Well, and also just a waste. Like all that chocolate, you know, someone should eat it.
I agree. Chocolate is delicious. It should be donated or something, for sure. And one of the little things here, we won't go into this, but one of the things I have to mention is I love in the original movie where there's a guy who invents a computer that can find the location of the Wonka golden tickets, but that computer has already developed some sort of AI because he gets snarky and talk about, you know, what is a lifetime supply of chocolate good for a computer? But I think that's another good question here before we go into the chocolate factory. You know, the grand prize is a lifetime supply of chocolate. Like, what would that be? You know, what I would consume in my lifetime is very different than what Denon would consume in his lifetime. And so I wonder, like, to you, let's go to you, Ben, what is a lifetime supply of chocolate to you?
Well, geez. I mean, if I don't care about my health, it's probably a bar or two a day. Mm-hmm. But that seems irresponsible. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it probably should be like one or two a week to be healthful minded. But you also got to worry about these like actuarial things, because a lot of times lifetimes get defined as say 25 years, 30 years,
right?
Because you have to cap it. It has to be a known quantity to a company when they're creating these sweepstakes, because you have to have a known prize value and all this other stuff. And so usually they'll define lifetime as, say, 3 bars a week for 25 years. And if that's not what would be a lifetime supply for you, too bad.
Yeah, see, I see that, Ben, for the average company. I think Wonka's more generous than that. I also think Wonka's a little devious. We find out that he's big into small print. You know, one of the things we do learn, Dan, in the most recent movie is he was screwed by small print, which is why I think he becomes so careful with
Fair
it.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So I do think that, Ben, he's got a little bit of he's gambling a little bit himself here. Mm. He knows too much chocolate lowers your life expectancy. I think this is where math and science comes in, Dan. Mm-hmm. He has combined the biology and medical knowledge of chocolate that is probably his specialty after making chocolate with the actuarial tables and has figured out, right, sort of either you're going to be very careful like Ben and eat just a little bit of chocolate so you don't shorten your life, which sets the amount, or you're going to not be like Ben. You're going to be more like me and just eat the chocolate you got and shorten your life. Either way, the math will work out to be roughly the same amount of chocolate.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that number is, because I'm not a chocolate genius like Wonka.
Yeah.
But I think he's got it figured out that either method, he gets a fixed quantity of chocolate into you.
Well, and spoiler alert, he also gives away the factory to the kid. So how is it? Maybe that's the scam anyways, that you get you have to pull the lifetime supply, embezzle it out of your own profits.
Right. I was going to say that. I was just going to say, well, the spoiler, the grand prize is the factory, which technically is a lifetime supply of chocolate. I don't know, embezzling.
Only if you're an embezzler, though.
I mean, don't people get high on their own supply? I mean, I think you can take a bar here or there. If you own the factory, it's not embezzling. It's your...
Only if the board approves that as a part of your salary, Dan.
That's a publicly traded walk is publicly traded.
Even private companies have boards, Dan.
I guess so. That's true. So, you know, there might be some tricks here, so maybe he does have to work that out. But, you know, Dan, here's what's funny is you said I had forgotten that he had gotten screwed in Wonka by the small print. But don't you think it's interesting that Wonka, who seems like a good guy, then uses that small print to screw children in the later movie, which is actually the earlier movie?
Exactly. But I think it's done in a very clever way. And again, for me, first time watching it, like, and I was young, and so I didn't know that things always had a happy ending. I was like, oh my God, he is so mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And he's taking this all away. And then you realize it was a test. And I don't know if that made it worse or better, Dan.
Worse.
Like, it's awful. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, but what I love is the kid rose to the test. The kid was like, no matter how mean you're going to be, I'm not going down that route. I could take this gobstopper and I could screw you, but I am going to be above. And it just goes to show goodness wins in the end. He gets the factory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see it like, I mean, I guess that's what happens. Okay. I can argue with what happens in the movie.
So you're going to argue that the movie really was different, Dan.
What I'm going to say is that the everlasting gobstopper moment's interesting to me because, you know, throughout the movie, he's getting tempted by a guy who's going to, you know, if you give me the everlasting gobstopper, right, I'll make you a millionaire. And he gives mm-hmm. the gobstopper back, but I can't tell if he doesn't give it back to say, I'm not going to screw you, because he doesn't know that Wonka knows that the everlasting gobstopper can screw him. It seems like he gives it back as if like, hey, I don't want your stupid gobstopper anyway, jackhole. Mm-hmm. So you take it and, you know, stick it. And then he leaves. I don't know that it's that moment of like, oh, hey, I have this chance to screw you and I'm not going to.
Well, Dan, you know, that's just the difference between an optimist and a cynic.
Well, maybe. I think it shows his purity of heart in that even though Wonka's screwing him over, he still doesn't want to like ruin the factory and ruin, you know, Candy and the love and happiness that creates.
What is wrong with you two?
However, Grandpa Joe is all in on screwing
dude,
it.
Well, Grandpa Joe has a lot of problems.
Not like Grandpa Joe. No, he's got the right idea here. Yeah, I think Wonka's completely whacked out in this particular situation. But let's get into, so we're in, okay? We're getting to the end of the movie. We got to talk about the beginning. Let's talk about the chocolate factory, the magical land that is similar to Oz, except made out of chocolate. And the chocolate room is, you know, one of, I think as a kid, it's got to be your favorite place in the factory, because you go in and everything is edible. There's chocolate trees, there's candy mushrooms, there's gummy bear pea pods. I don't know what they are. They're growing out of the ground. It's a delicious wonderscape that is, you know, I imagine, Denon, your eyes must have popped out of your head.
Oh, I loved it. And I, you know, gingerbread houses are nice. They're structures that are edible, but they're small and you can't go inside them unless you make them really big, I guess. I don't know.
It's true.
You know, how's that for a tourism?
I can't argue with any of that.
That is true. But, you know, no, I loved it. And it is all, so as someone who's a slightly picky eater, and also, you know, is a big fan of certain baking shows, and I often wonder about the flavors that are being put together that these connoisseurs mm-hmm. seem to like. Mm-hmm. What I loved about it was just your basic solid candy. Mm-hmm. Nothing wacky, nothing weird, just solid good candy that I would have, I think, liked all of it.
The only thing I think of is also the magic in keeping it from being just a sticky, gross mess in there. Like, it must be very dry and very cool in that room, because otherwise everything would be melting and disgusting.
Well, it's amazing to me that everything...
I'm glad that's where your head went,
especially with an open river. Like, man, he's got some good dehumidifiers in there.
What's amazing to me is how much sugar and chocolate can hold structure and make mm-hmm. things that you can walk around in and then eat. You know, I remember, mm-hmm. you know, the first time I think I had... My grandma made these like little tarts, but instead of having plastic, it was like chocolate inside of a chocolate shell. So you could just eat the whole thing, you know, like bread bowls, I think, are really cool, too, although a completely different type of food. But the fact that you can like eat everything that you're using is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't eat the spoons, but in Wonka's factory, you probably can. I love that idea. And Ben, you turned me on to this great YouTuber, Amari Guichon, who is French. I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly. Guichon.
Sure.
He creates really cool structures out of chocolate. I mean, they're art pieces. They're not load bearing, but they are pretty cool. They're realistic. And if you had a guy like that on staff, this chocolate room, I mean, it's a piece of cake, no pun intended.
Oh, it is. And Dan, I think I'm going to get excited here for a moment because there's two of the greatest sort of physics going on in this. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I think many of us forget how strong and impressive the carbon-carbon bond is, mm-hmm. right? The carbon bond is, you know, sort of key to life. Mm-hmm. It's the basis of our structures. You know, no one would say, I know Ben thinks we're squishy and risky and he wants his metal body, mm-hmm. but we're rather stable as structures, mm-hmm. right? And so food is basically carbon-based. And so that carbon bond is giving you a lot of that building block to begin with. And then, of course, everyone's favorite, it's the microstructure, it's the foam, it's the emulsion, it's that, you know, complex fluid structure, exactly, that gives you that added burst of material science mm-hmm. and structure. I mean, like, that room is a scientist's dream. Like, you just go in there as a physicist, and not only do you get to eat it all, you get to study it all. Right. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's ever bitten into a Whopper knows that those are strong little balls to be crunching up, right? That's that foam, Dennis.
Yeah.
Or have the everlasting gobstoppers, which you gotta suck. You can't chew them at all.
Yes,
but true. And it's not just the chocolate; it's the sugar too, which you know, spun sugar and sculpted sugar is even more of an art in mm-hmm. some ways than chocolate. It can be even more difficult because the thermal properties are a lot more difficult. When I first took glass blowing, one of the ways they teach you how to blow glass is to work with sugar. With molten sugar, because it has a lot of similar properties where, you know, it if you don't cool it down properly, it'll crack. You have to keep it moving and rotating, otherwise it'll slump and do the wrong thing. And if you get it on your hand, you burn the crap out of yourself.
So, you know, as another personal story with working with chocolate and the structures, I make a great cheesecake called the zebra cheesecake.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's a white chocolate cheesecake. And the trick is you have the chocolate cheesecake mix and the white chocolate cheesecake mix. And you pour them into the pan alternately from about 8 inches above the pan. Mm. And the physics of it landing in the middle creates the swirls that later becomes the zebra stripes when you cut it.
Mm.
Beautiful piece of physics. Problem is, if you're a novice working with chocolate like I was the first time, and to Ben's point, you don't get the temperature right, you go to pour that white chocolate, which is apparently solidified on you.
Mm.
And instead of a smooth splash, you get a rather big splash. Now, it all stayed in the pan,
yeah.
but let's just say it was not a nice, neat stripe pile pattern, but it tasted great.
Get more of a thunk than a swirl.
Yes.
That is the beauty of messed up candy and desserts. It still tastes great.
That is true, yes. That's the beauty of it, as you said, Ben. I love, in this movie, I love the mushrooms, which are very intricate because they have, I don't know what the mushroom itself is made out of, but the spots are all cream, and you know, and the flowers are filled with some kind of liquid, and they're in an edible cup. You know, I mean, it's really cool. You know, that room is fantastic, and of course, the crowning jewel is a river of chocolate that is mixed by waterfall. Wonka famously says that he is the only chocolatier in the world. That's a chocolate maker, right? Chocolatier who makes chocolate by waterfall. I mean, pretty cool. It's weird to have a riverboat on it, unless that riverboat is also made out of chocolate. It'd be weird to pollute it with gas and all that stuff. Strange, but I imagine Wonka's got that part figured out. But this is my favorite part. A river of chocolate. I don't know if this is the right way to go. What do you guys think?
I love it for multiple reasons. I do think I have this vague memory, Dan, and I didn't pay attention in rewatching the movie. But my recollection is, whether they show it or not, it's fundamentally a paddle boat. So you avoid the gasoline problem.
I think you're right.
By pedaling.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
I think there's, you know, some human power, but I totally agree.
That's putting Oompa the boat.
You're still gonna have
Oompa Loompa power. Yeah.
You still need lubricants.
Now, well, you know, but that chocolate lubricants.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. You know, just your chocolate's at a different temperature. Mm. I love the air rating, and I think this is something that is really important that people don't understand. And I'm going to bring in one more piece of foam facts here. This is actually real science, Dan. This is not fake science. Your detection of whether something is creamy has almost nothing to do with the fat content.
Hmm.
It is the structure and size of the bubbles. This is kind of well known. And so this is why certain ice cream like gelato can taste creamier and have a lower fat content than American ice cream, because they get the aeration correct.
Okay.
It's part of mixing in the air to create the right bubbles to give you the right foam texture. So I'm totally with Wonka on this. I'm sure nature's waterfall is the best way to get that perfect creamy texture in your chocolate.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough for me to watch that and think it's actual, like, chocolate that would then go in a bar because it's very liquidy. Like, even the warmest chocolate is still very viscous. So I do wonder if this is really how he makes his, chocolate, his Wonka brand chocolate drink, mm-hmm. and not necessarily the production factory for the Wonka bars. But I guess that will have to remain a mystery.
It's chocolate drink
of the Wonka magic.
Like Wan Hu or something like that. Yeah. Woohoo. I don't know. But I imagine, I guess you're right, Ben. I didn't think about that. That would have to be a molten chocolate lava river. It wouldn't be, and if Augustus Gloop fell in it, he would be screaming, not for his life because he couldn't breathe, but because his skin was being melted off by nuclear chocolate river.
For it to be that liquidy. I mean, but you don't want to get chocolate that warm. Like, a good working temperature for chocolate is pretty close to body temperature. So in that case, it does make sense that you wouldn't get burned if you fell in a river of real chocolate. Uh-huh. It would feel more like a warm pool or maybe a hot tub, but that's not, that looks like brown water, not chocolate.
Sure. That's interesting. I don't think I realized that. Well, either way, it's pretty cool to have a chocolate river, and it seems possible. And they travel on this chocolate river to many other rooms in the factory. And one of the things that we have to talk about, of course, one of my favorites is this three-course meal gum. Now, even in the movie Wonka, they have a piece of candy that mimics a night on the town. And, this is kind of interesting. You know, a piece of gum or chocolate that is able to mimic multiple tastes individually over time. That's a very complex science, I think. Mm-hmm. I can't tell if maybe there's like drugs in the chocolate, so they think that they're experiencing a night on the town. I'm not sure, but I feel like there's a scientific way to do this.
Well, I mean, it really just comes down to good engineering. I personally remember having gum that has like two flavors because they put some layers in and, it takes you a second to get through to the second layer to taste both flavors. But of course, that's not the whole story. Because those flavors lasted. You really need to use those old classic fruit stripe flavors, which end very, very quickly.
Yes.
And then
yes, they do.
That way, you get you get your app, your main, and your dessert distinctly, like we see in the movie. And then you need to use some sort of mechanical, maybe a flavor crystal kind of thing. I've heard about those in candy. Mm-hmm. So that with some crystals more robust than others, so that as you chew through the gum, you're releasing those fruit stripe flavors, but dinner in this case, in the right order.
Well, I got a question here, Dennis. So before Ben mentioned this, so there with the gum, there is the obvious mastication element. And for those who don't want to sound smart, that's chewing. So there's the physical act of, kind of like how you smash and knead dough. You're kind of doing that with your teeth. That's at the very least, it is something from a physical standpoint that has to be taken into consideration when solving this.
So it can either be a solution. It can be part of the solution for the flavor release, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
I think the reason for it in the gum is so it's staying in your mouth and you're not swallowing it and you don't prematurely get rid of it.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So I think that's the thing. I also think there's a mixing perhaps that goes on. But really what I think is super cool about this, Dan, is I feel like if someone really wanted to, we have, to Ben's point, all the physics is solved and it's an engineering problem. Because this is, to me, the one clear example of nanotechnology that we have and that we know works.
Okay.
So this is not your science fiction nanobots and all of that. This is actually making molecular nanocages. It's time-release medicine. We do that. You take medicine that's in a time-release capsule because we can build chemical cages that have different levels of when they get broken.
Okay.
And they have various levels of strength, lasting time. And then we know artificial flavoring, Dan. We call it artificial. We all know it's actually natural because everything made is natural because it's still just made by people.
Right.
And people are part of nature.
Yep.
But let's just say natural people chemicals instead of artificial ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So we can get all the flavors we want. We can put them in the correct nano cages, and you have the right dose, so you get it for the amount of time you want. It's all in the dosing. This is basically, if Big Pharma wanted to make gum that was meals, I think they could.
You know, it's interesting because there are this time release idea. It's so interesting because, you know, there obviously Wonka's not using this for insidious factors. But, you know, I did a whole episode on poisonings on Fascinating Nouns. I'll put a link to it. And it's, you know, there was this very insidious poisoning event that has the same principle. And I'm not suggesting this is going to seem very off the wall, this comparison. But I think it's interesting is that there was this small pellet that it was a nuclear pellet, and it was covered in a very specific wax that only melted at body temperature. And, you know, was injected into a guy's leg, and then it slowly melted away and released a toxin and killed him. But this is, you know, time release, whether it's for poison or for pleasure, is a really interesting science because our bodies are always working things out, right? Like whether it's melting, yes, or distributing, you know, you mentioned these cages, these chemical cages, whether you're chewing it, whether it's your enzymes in the enzymes in your mouth are dissolving it. There's a lot of things working against things you put in your body. So timing it out is really tricky. But if you master that, you can have a gum that tastes like a meal. That's really cool.
No, it is. And I do think this is why I prefer the chemistry to the mechanical. Mm-hmm. As much as I love mechanical stuff, two problems with it being mechanical in chewing. One, most of our nano cages are so small, you're not going to have any precision from your chewing to know which ones you're breaking. Mm-hmm. And you may even have trouble breaking things. You don't really break nanoparticles by chewing. That doesn't really happen.
Okay.
So I think chemistry is your way here. You could use the chewing to a degree because your gum could have different chemicals in different places and your chewing brings them into contact to start the chemical reaction so that nothing happens until you chew. So I do think there's a role of the chewing, but not necessarily in the breaking, more as a mixing.
Mm. Okay, I like that. I mean, and I think it all works, which is really cool. Now, the thing, you know, the thing that is goes a little sideways is when they get to the blueberry pie, you know, violet turns violet. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the strange part where I think that may be possible. The filling with juice is probably not, but you mm-hmm. could see, you know, is there a chemical reaction that could make your skin turn a bluish or purplish hue with this process?
Oh, I definitely think so. Look at how many people painted their skin blue with chemicals. So,
yeah.
You know, you're just coming from the inside out.
Right. It seems harder, right. But yeah. Right.
Or you have the incredibly rare allergic reaction to X that turns your skin blue.
Yeah.
Yes. I like that you said X, like the physics. Are you going to do this in a Physics of X episode?
We might. We might want to do it in a Physics of X.
Where X is
turning blue.
Well, well, you also turn blue when you have trouble with circulation and breathing. And if you're inflating that fast, yeah, you might turn blue from the fact that you're suffocating. Now, right, you have to solve the problem of why is violet inflating? But, you know, if you get past that part, the turning blue seems perfectly reasonable.
And, you know, Ben, the inflating part, a lot of chemical reactions have an excess gas that's released.
Well, there you mm-hmm. go.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we do know the volume of the gas can be quite larger than the volume of the original gum. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a reaction to this, it could happen. I'm not going to totally rule it out.
It could happen. That's one way to get there is through suffocation, is what you're saying. So let's one last thing here. You know, we're not going to cover everlasting gobstoppers. You know, when people are going to wonder why? Well, that's because we dedicated an entire episode early on in our run. I realized it was so old. We should probably do it again, but we ended up on suckable snail as a solve for the everlasting gobstopper. So I think you should find it and listen to that episode because it's fantastic. But let's, in closing here, I want to talk about the Oompa Loompas because this is kind of a fascinating phenomenon to me. The Oompa Loompas are basically an entire race of people that were relocated from, you know, their entire civilization was uprooted taken from Oompa Loompa Land and placed in this factory. There's a couple of interesting things here. They clearly keep their cultural traditions of song and dance to everything, which is great. But they also, you know, there's like this kind of cool thing, an immigration thing, like in the beginning of America, turn of the 19th to the 20th century, where you've got this new culture that's kind of infusing the chocolate in some ways with the way they did things. I like this. This may be the edge that Wonka needed, was this very exotic take on chocolate. And I believe he treats his Oompa Loompas very well. I shouldn't say his Oompa Loompas, the Oompa Loompas very well.
Well, it is that interesting part of the movie where they do walk that line where the Oompa Loompas were there as a voluntary workforce.
Yes.
That liked it, that there was clearly some disaster happening back in their homeland. Mm-hmm. And they're a partner in the factory.
Definitely.
In many ways. And they actually, they're the solid moral compass for the factory.
Yes. Like
they make it clear what is going wrong with each of the children and the choices they're making. Mm-hmm. And so I do find that kind of an interesting element as well. And I love, Dan, that there's at least one movie out there where people sing, mm-hmm. and you are not bothered by it.
Well, they are like the Greek chorus. You know, they are the moral compass of the factory. I would argue in some ways that they are more responsible for Wonka's, making Wonka's chocolate a reality than Wonka himself. You know, he's a crazy, eccentric madman, you know, inventor, but you need people on the ground who make that into a reality. You know, that's true with you guys. You know, Denon, you are the lunatic physicist who comes up with crazy ideas. Ben is the engineer who makes those a reality. And you know, so basically Ben's the Oompa Loompa and Ben, you are Willy Wonka.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, you need a workforce to achieve, you know, your dreams. Wonka can make enough candy to like stock a shop for a day. But if he's going to supply the whole world with chocolate bars, you need a factory with actual employees. And I appreciate in Wonka how he really kind of goes into a partnership with the first Oompa Loompa. And it's not some horrible tragedy. It's, you know, it's good common business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and everyone, it looks like a great mutualistic environment, right? Now, one of the things that I do have to say that I do find kind of fun is that they obviously are humanoid. I believe that if I remember my story correctly, they are on Earth. I don't think, although he does take the great glass elevator and things go real sideways when he like takes off and visits other planets. But I don't think the Oompa Loompas are from another planet. But nonetheless, I do think their coloring is super interesting because they have orange skin, green hair, white eyebrows, and blue eyes. That's a lot of color. And if we were to say that they are, let's say that they are at least have human DNA, it shows just how vibrant you could make a human being. Like how much diversity we have in our genetics is just fascinating. I know we've talked about it on other shows, but the Oompa Loompas, I think, really epitomize what you can do with genetics.
And also just to the point, we discussed this in some detail, the various ways you may or may not get skin coloring. Like some is pigment, some can be structure, it can be absorption versus reflection. A lot of fun physics in how you get that range of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or perhaps they just eat a lot of carrots.
I was going to say, yeah, carrots can do that too. And I imagine orange has it. I mean, because what I just love about pigmentation in nature is that it's always for a reason. You know, and I wonder, we're not going to speculate here, but I wonder what orange skin, green hair, white eyebrows and blue eyes. What is the advantage? What was their environmental advantage in Oompa Loompa Land? But I'm going to leave that for our audience to speculate. And what could things have been like there that helped protect them? But let's get to our Ayers additions and omissions section, guys. Things we wanted to talk about, but we didn't quite get to. Denon, is there anything about the Oompa Loompas, chocolate factory, a river of fudge that you wanted to get to?
Well, I just think the optimizing ideal chocolate is an interesting thing. You know, at some level, I love chocolate bars, chocolate candy. But, you know, chocolate mousse really can take chocolate to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. And that is the ultimate foam and chocolate combined. So when you take two great things and put them together, it's clear you get something even better, Dan. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to leave our listeners and viewers with that lovely physics thought foam plus chocolate equals chocolate mousse. What else do you need?
That's it. Well said, Denon. Well said. What about you, Ben? Anything you want to add to the chocolate mousse or discuss about the rest of Wonka's factory?
Well, I think I'll give our viewers and listeners a hint on the Oompa Loompa coloring and say, why is an orange tiger a good camouflage?
Oh,
if you can figure that out, you can figure out why the Oompa Loompas are colored the way they are.
Oh, I love that. And if you can answer why parrots are green, you can get their hair color involved as well, I would say. I have two things here. You know, I love Wonka's fashion sense. You know, if anyone out there is looking for a great Christmas present, a full-length purple felt overcoat is just what I've been looking for to add to my collection. And this one's really inside, okay? But for people who've watched the original 1971 movie, there, the reporter from Paraguay who talks about the guy who fakes his golden ticket, spoiler alert, that newscaster looks like Bronson Pinchot, who Pinchot, I always forget how to say his name, but he was an actor on from my youth on Perfect Strangers, and I believe he is in Beverly Hills Cop. He looks identical. It's not him, but I swear they're related. I could not find his name anywhere in the credits. So if anyone knows the answer to that, if they're related or if they're completely not even connected in any way, shape, or form, let me know. And the best way to do that is on social media. You can get in touch with the show. We are on X, formerly Twitter, at FGGBTpod. We are on Facebook at FGGBT, and our website, FGGBT.com. But you can get in touch with us individually. Denon, where can people find you?
Well, on Twitter and Instagram, or X and Instagram, whatever you want to call it, you flip my name. It's at Denon Michael. I actually started a new Instagram at Physics of X, because as we've mentioned, I've been doing the Physics of X, where X is everything except politics. That's also on my YouTube channel, which is so old, it's at Michael Denon. I got to actually use my name in the right order. And for those of you who split the difference between really old and really young, there's Facebook, and there I stick in a prof, so it's at Prof Denon Michael.
Great. What about you, Ben? Where can people find you?
You can find me on all the major social media networks at B Siepser.
How do you spell that?
Spell that B-S-I-E-P-S-E-R.
And I can be found on X, formerly Twitter, at Daniel J. Glenn, on Instagram at The Daniel J. Glenn, on Facebook at Analytical Mastermind. And I have a website, danieljglenn.com.
And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe, and ring that bell so you never miss an episode.
And finally, this show contains powerful information that can be misused by those hell-bent on world domination. So take this information and do good with it. Remember, you always want to be a superhero, never a supervillain. So until next time, thank you for listening. Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies is a Glencoe production and is produced by me, Daniel J. Glenn. The Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies introduction was produced by Daniel J. Glenn and Paul Springers, with music and sound design written and performed by Paul Springers. Now, of course, if you're listening to this episode and you've gotten this far, you're going to want to subscribe. Well, how do you do that? We're on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. But if you're not already subscribed to those platforms, I made it easy for you. Go to our website, fggbt.com. You'll find links to those subscribe buttons and also links to our social media, both for the show and for our individual experts, the members of the Brain Trust. That's all right there. FGGBT.com. And before you leave, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find the link at the top of the page for everything we've got, and you'll notice that we've got both a YouTube version and an audio-only version. Depending on what you like, we got it for you. And if you do like those videos, you can go ahead and subscribe to those as well. We're on youtube.com/Daniel J. Glenn. And once again, if you like this show, you're going to like everything that I do. Go to danieljglenn.com to find out more. Thank you for listening.